Hello and welcome to Stray Popcorn. I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
My name is Al Nichols.
And how's your week been, Al?
Really good. Just busy doing a lot of writing and just trying to keep my head on while trying to keep from going crazy. So how about you, sir? How you been doing?
It's been good. So little interesting news that you picked up from Slash Film.
Yes. Actually, I noticed this today. I was just checking out their website before we started the podcast. And apparently there is an article here. And it's called Disney's Frozen is Turning Your Kids Gay, says Pastor. So this article, I'm not going to read the entire article, but go to slashfilm.com. You just do a search for Disney's Frozen is Turning Your Kids Gay, says Pastor. And apparently this comes from a pastor and Generations radio host, Kevin Swanson. No relation to Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec, but him and his co-host, Stephen Vaughn, ended up going to town on the film, calling it a progressive, pro-gay, pro-bestiality agenda. And then the quote is, "Friends, this is evil, just evil." Have you seen Frozen?
I have not. I actually just got it so my kids could watch it this weekend.
Right. Well, you know, be careful. That's all I got to say. Because according to these guys, all of a sudden, you never know. You never know what's going to end up happening if you let your kids watch this film. So
That should be followed up with pastors that point out gay issues in Disney films.
Mm-hmm.
Pack more fudge than the Smoky Mountain Chocolate Factory, says Frozen directors.
Oh, man, it's hysterical. This film is basically, like, from everything that I've heard about it, it's actually one of the first Disney films where the girl is not being rescued by some prince. You know, it's basically kind of a reverse situation. You know, the girl is the hero. From what I understand, maybe I'm wrong, but I know a lot of my friends out there who, you know, definitely are looking, you know, to promote better feminine role models for other girls and just for children in general. You know, they're really excited about the film. So it's not surprising to me that you have some redneck Christians, you know, who really don't speak for everybody, but of course they turn this into like a giant, it's an opportunity for them to get a little bit of they get a quote in the newspaper and a few people take notice to their ridiculously stupid talk show. So,
yeah, usually when people start barking about homosexuality, I just think they're gay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the first thing that comes to mind. So if you guys don't want to be misunderstood, maybe you should shut the fuck up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I hear about articles and stuff like this, I don't know. It's really funny to me, you know, that somehow they're able to go into a film and this is what they pick up from it. You know, it's like, so you're sitting there in the film and you're actively thinking, well, this entire thing is a, actually, you know what? I'll take that back. I don't think they actually sat down to watch the film. I don't think they've even seen it.
Probably not.
Yeah, this is just something for them to like, well, you know, Disney does it, and you know, Disney's trying to turn our kids gay.
Yeah, I'm tired of the conspiracy theories from that side of the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, really, guys? Like, you're starting to sound like Art Bell coast to coast. Like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like, some of the stuff, like, some of the conspiracy theories that go on, I'm just like, it could be a show all on its own. Like, if X-Files were around today, all they have to do is turn it on Michael Savage for 5 minutes, and they'd have their monster of the week. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
well, actually, I would be really happy if X-Files came back and what they started hunting and researching was Tea Party people and hopefully, like, trying to uncover some sort of alien conspiracy.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the big plot that X-Files was always building up to with the smoking man and stuff like that was the Tea Party.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, this is actually what happened this last week. Michelle Bachmann, of course, you know, big Tea Party, you know, voice head. I don't know what else to call her, but voice head. That's hysterical. To me, anyway. Anyway, she basically came out and said that gay people were bullying the rest of America.
I mean her husband's equally as guilty of that, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Because the only thing that dude's bricked around her is an actual wall.
Oh God, I know. I mean, anytime she opens her mouth, I'm just like, you know, isn't there a law against this? You know, I mean, freedom for everyone else, freedom of speech for everyone else. But I mean, you know, this isn't so much speech as it is like some sort of weird muttering, you know.
She's got a real Stepford Wives vibe about her. I don't know.
Well, like, what do you mean? Real, the big, giant, open, wide eyes that look like they're about to consume you.
And then her husband's like flaming so much, the entire gay club wants to put him out. So. Yeah. I mean, it's,
you know what? There was some sort of sketch that I remember back in the day. Maybe it was Saturday Night Live or maybe it was Mad TV. I don't remember, but someone did that where it was like, it was a Christian couple. And then the guy was just so basically he was gay as the day is long, you know, I mean, he was,
yeah.
And they're always trying to deny it and everything like that. Actually, I might be thinking of a Phil Hendry bit now, but, anyway, yeah. So I thought that was an interesting article.
I try to tune stuff like that out, but sometimes you can. It's just so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how people take themselves seriously after spouting stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, let's get on to something else. You want to talk about the, what does this say? It says the 7 actors up for the lead Jedi apprentice role.
Yeah, that came out today, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So on the list we have, hold on real quick here. I had it up and then I lost it.
I have it right here so I can read.
Okay, go ahead.
Ed Spielers. I don't know of him. He's on Downton Abbey.
Yeah, I don't watch that.
Yeah, I have no idea who the hell that is. I almost want to know.
I refuse to watch it on principle.
Because everyone else is.
Dude, it's just I'm lying. I've seen a little bit of it. I don't really think it's as good as everybody makes it out to be.
Yeah.
I think it's like one of those like, oh, I watch PBS kind of things. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I have a problem sometimes watching stuff, even like period pieces. Like sometimes, I mean, I watch Mad Men, but I also kind of hate Mad Men. I hate the way the guys are, you know, just that period of time, the way that people treat each other, because it's really like a dickhead society at that point. And this is no real different, you know, in Downton Abbey. It's basically, you know, well, you got these posh upper class people and you have servants. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much all you need to know about the show, in my opinion. But anyway, so Ed Spielers, I don't know how to say his name properly, John Bagoya, or Boyega, Attack the Block. So
yeah,
okay,
that was a good movie.
Yeah, okay, I don't know who he is either. So they're definitely going for an unknown. Matthew James Thomas from what is this? Billy from he's on Theater, who played in Billy Elliot and About a Boy. So I don't know who that is. Oh, he appeared in Billy Elliot and About a Boy. Okay, I'm like, did he do the stage version of that? And then also a guy named Jesse Plemons of Friday Night Lights and Breaking Bad.
I can totally see that.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Jesse Plemons, which one is that though? Is that the one who played Badger, or was that the one who played?
He was the one that was like in the last season. He was like Walt's. New apprentice.
Oh, right. Okay, so that's who he is. Anytime I hear the name Jesse, I think of, you know, the character on the show. So I'm like, well, maybe it was one of the surrounding guys. I don't know.
He was also known as Evil Matt Damon.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Matt Damon. Also, Ray Fisher, theater actor. I don't know who that is either.
He was in Deep Throat, Deep Inside Ginger Lynn. Oh, sorry. That was Ginger Lynn. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he wasn't any of those things. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, no worries. But anyway, I don't know.
Those were all porn movies.
I mean, maybe I should have, like, taken this list and pulled up their IMDb pages and seen what I've actually, you know, watched them in before. But I don't recognize any of these names, which is not unusual. And it doesn't say anything, really. I mean, it's just like, you know, they're going for someone who can act. So, you know, not just a name that they're going to pay a lot of money. You know, so I know they already did the casting news for, and you said that this, you're not sure if this is confirmed or not. And I thought it was, but I'm not entirely positive. What's the actor's name from Girls who has been considered for the role of the villain, the Darth Vader like character in this new film?
He's the guy that plays Adam on Girls. His name is, sorry.
No worries. If you're looking that up.
Adam Driver.
Yeah. So I don't know. Here's my big question about these films. So do you think that he's going to do a kind of Star Trek kind of move when they came back with, you know, with the original characters, you know, back in 2009, of course, with J.J. Abrams, Star Trek. You think they're going to do a similar approach with the story? Because in Star Wars novels, you know, you have a huge written history. What happened after Return of the Jedi? What happened before that? What happened during that? You know, do you think they're going to be pulling from any of that? Do you think we're going to see like the Solo kids or anything? Have you even read the Star Wars books at all? Or
I have. I don't think that they're going to do that, though. I think they're because he's already came out and said that those books are null and void.
Well, okay.
In this universe.
All right.
Kind of real expensive fan fiction.
I know that pissed a lot of people off, too, when that announcement was made, because that's what they like to look at the Star Wars universe as, you know, is this continuation.
Yeah, but I mean, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, it was going to be made. I mean, let's just be real about it. Even if Lucas hadn't sold it to Disney, it was going to be made.
I mean, I honestly wish that, you know, if we're going to make things null and void, let's just make the entire prequels null and void as well while we're at it.
So. That is actually, Kathleen Kennedy said something in an interview about that they haven't rolled out redoing the prequels.
Interesting. But are they thinking about doing the same thing with the original trilogy, or they're basically just saying like, oh, no. The original films were just a big mistake. We're just, you know.
I don't know what they're trying to do there, and maybe it just might have been something she said, you know, for the sake of saying it. Because it was such, it was exciting, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, ah, here's Star Wars, it's back. Let's think of all the possibilities of what we can do as Star Wars. So she may have just been saying it in the heat of the moment. Like, there might not, I really have a hard time thinking that she'll do that, considering she has a relationship with Lucas anyway.
Well, she was also majorly involved with the, wasn't she? No, wait. No, she wasn't. She wasn't involved with any of the prequels.
No, but she's definitely worked with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that would be like, hey, man, I redid your story because I thought it sucked.
Yeah, your films were terrible. Your last director, you know, debut, you know, coming back to your original franchise, sucked balls. So we're going to we're going to start over. So,
yeah, but I think, in all honesty, going back to the Adam Driver thing, I could totally see him playing a villain role really well.
Yeah, I agree. I honestly hope whatever they do, they like, I know some people might disagree with me, but I kind of want like a Vader type villain, you know, someone who's kind of mechanical, I don't know, or at least has kind of a presence about them. So I hope whatever they do with that role, it's, I'm not saying they need to do exactly what they did with Vader, but I would like them to go down that vein, you know, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, here's something that's always been kind of intriguing to me. Like, is there a, like, you know, you've seen other RTD2s, you know what I mean? Like, different variations in the universe of the same type of robot.
Mm-hmm.
What if Darth Vader was one of the, another situation like that?
Well, I mean, did you ever play the Forced Unleashed games?
I did.
Okay, well, I mean, they kind of went down that road a little bit with, I don't remember his first name, but Starkiller, you know? He pretty much is a, like, you know, there's that variation ending where he kind of becomes
like Vader, you know? I mean, he doesn't become Vader, but he's all mechanized and stuff like that. I mean, it would be an interesting concept. Essentially, it's a suit, you know? So
right.
Maybe when you're thinking about like Vader all across the galaxy hunting them down, you may have Vader Prime, and then you may have different variations of Vaders out there. So since they are kind of going back to scratch, you know, or going back to, you know, like basically saying the expanded universe is basically its own thing, does not have any connection with the films. Maybe with this, maybe they can, you know, kind of go with that type of concept, which I think would be awesome personally.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. I think there's a lot they could do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives that like familiar air to it that we're used to out of the entire series without taking back anything. Right. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, I could get down with something like Thrawn or, you know, something along the lines of that too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it could go either way. I'm just glad that he's going to be using practical sets instead of CGI heavy effects.
7-year contract with model makers and different various people. I that was the one thing I was really excited about. And I'm actually hoping I was actually relieved. And I know a lot of people were terrified when they heard that Disney was buying Star Wars. But Disney has been doing a really good job, actually, in my opinion, about preserving the efforts of these different companies that they've been working with, like Marvel, for instance. They acquired them, but I would say, you know, maybe aside from like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., even though I think that's getting better, they've done a really good job telling stories and allowing them just to kind of roam around in that universe. And now they have a budget, you know, where they can actually do more. And they're actually expanding those franchises and those properties. And they're going into new streams like Netflix with the Defenders and all the various characters that they've pulled into that. So with Star Wars, my thought was is that, well, maybe finally we'll finally get the original Star Wars trilogy on Blu-ray, you know, without all the I think it was Rick McCollum who was the original producer on those films, or at least the prequels. Mm-hmm. And
he was.
I wanted to punch that guy in the face anytime I watched the making ofs, because he's just like, we went back and we made the image more dense, you know, and it keeps using that term like dense, you know. And I'm not really like crazy about like the fact that they went through and cleaned up the film a little bit, because that was one thing when they were like, hey, we want to add a few more stormtroopers here. We want to do that, because they re-released them back in, I think it was like 97 to theaters. Right. I didn't have a problem so much with those changes. I mean, there was some really stupid things that they added, like the entire Jabba the Hutt scene and A New Hope, which
yeah.
is unnecessary. But, you know, and I am kind of more of a purist. However, like them going through and like kind of cleaning up some of the the lines and stuff like that were around the TIE fighters and any of the battles and stuff like that. I was okay with that type of, you know, correction, you know, like, oh, yeah, we can matte brush that out a little bit. But when they started getting really crazy with that stuff and they're even changing the story, they're changing the characters' motivations, their personalities, because they did that, you know, clearly even with like the way over talked about Han shot first or Greedo shot first kind of, you know, nonsense. But I am hoping that Disney will, one, re-release those films. I would still like to see those in 3D, to be honest. You know, I know that was something that Lucas had planned to do. Well, I'm okay with it. I'm totally okay with it. However, I would like to, you know, get rid of all the other nonsense that they added to it. Just kind of bring back the original films, because to me that would be just an opportunity to watch those films in theater again, you know.
Well, let me ask you something. Did you see The Phantom Menace in 3D?
I did, but I actually listened to the riff tracks at the same time while I was watching it.
Oh, that was enough to make me not want the 3D on the others, because that was the prequel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had CGI and it had separation, and that was some of the worst 3D I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but the conversion process is much better now, and they could actually do a much better job with the original trilogy. I mean, it's not to say necessarily that I have to have them in 3D. I'm not saying that, but I think reasonably that may be the only way we get to see those in theaters again. Cause you know, I know a lot of kids, you know, and I actually got the benefit of seeing those back in 97 when they were re-released. So that was exciting for me.
Yeah, I saw it too.
Yeah, because I wasn't around when those films originally came to theater. So this was my opportunity, you know? So that actually opened up a brand new world to me because I really wasn't a Star Wars fan before those came out. I kind of like the idea of, you know, like just bringing back those films once again to theater. And it seems the only way to really do that and where you get like a national scale kind of, you know, out of turnout is if you do it in 3D, you know, which is, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I would like to see those films again in the original way, or at least in a slightly cleaned up way, but not in the, we've added 372 cutscenes to the film and we've replaced your favorite things with things that you hate, you know? So I don't know. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not.
I was actually okay with the Jabba the Hutt scene because that was supposed to be in it originally, and they had a lot of visual effect problems.
But the problem with it is that you don't need it anymore. You know, I mean, they wrote around it like, okay, well, we have problems with the original actor. This is not what we want, so we're just going to ditch the scene. He ends up writing into the story the workaround. So the workaround is still there, plus the scene with Jabba, and I'm like, this is redundant. You've just made the film longer for this scene that, I don't know. I mean, this should have been like a deleted scene that you guys decided to go digital with, you know, like on the bonus features, but not in the film. So, I mean, because I'm not really in support of like, let's add new scenes to this, you know, unless it really makes it better. But did that scene really make the film better, you know?
Well, I mean, I can see it from a director standpoint. Like, if he wanted it in there, that was originally his vision. He had every right to do that. Mm-hmm. The problem I had was in Return of the Jedi, mm-hmm. the whole dance number scene.
Yeah, they got rid of that. They replaced the music. And I don't know which versions you've seen, but the worst. Because I ended up buying, when it first came out to DVD, I think I ended up buying it then. But this was shortly after, or maybe even before Revenge of the Sith. So they replaced the original actor who, you know, played Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, in the Return of the Jedi film. They replaced the ghost at the end with Anakin doing his Clockwork Orange stare. So I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. They did not do this, you know, because I just thought that was horrible. Like, you know, that would have been I was actually like afraid that the next version that they released would have replaced all of them. And Yoda would basically be there like doing leaps with a lightsaber in like spirit form. And you would have Ewan McGregor there standing as Obi-Wan. And that was the other thing that didn't make any sense to me. Like, why the hell is he standing there like that? You know, it's like, then why is Alec Guinness still old? That didn't make any sense to me. So,
yeah, that whole entire thing was just awful. Yeah. Like, you know, I can understand, okay, there's this one scene you meant to be in the movie, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like elaborating even further on something that didn't need to be fixed in the first place.
Right.
And he did a lot of that. And I think that's why he got so much shit.
Yeah.
For the entire thing. It's just like, dude, like, nobody asked for that musical number in Return of the Jedi. Like, that was probably, like, there was nothing redeeming about that number at all.
Mm-mm.
It was just like, oh, here's some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you like it as much as I do. Well, if that's what George Lucas is into, I don't want to see any of his record collection. Because that was one of the most awful things I've ever experienced.
You're talking about the new cut, right? Where they added the
right.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, I like the original version of that because it was really kind of, you know, I mean, not to say like that song is my favorite, you know, but, you know, that's the freedom I'm talking, freedom song, you know, whatever. They're not singing that, but that's, you know, that's the way I always see that scene. But, you know, it's supposed to be kind of corny. You know, you got these little tiny bear-like creatures running around. You got your heroes. I mean, I don't know. The entire thing, like, oh, we want to show the rest of the galaxy now celebrating this thing that they probably don't know about.
Right.
It's like, okay, wait. So you're saying that all the celebration is happening, but technically, just because they blew up the Death Star and they killed the Emperor, like I said, the news isn't going to get out that fast. It's going to take a little while. The other thing is that I think you still have kind of an authority over you. You know, they're not totally gone yet. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you might also have a lot of people still around like, well, I kind of like the Empire, you know, because you're going to have the Republicans and liberal kind of argument included in that story, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, but anyway, I'm getting way too deep with that. But yeah, that's digging deep. That's like, oh, God. Anyway, so yeah, it's an interesting thing that he decided to do there. I don't mean in a good way, but there was a lot of stuff like that, too, throughout those films. I mean, can you think of one, like, digital addition other than them cleaning up some of the, you know, the fragments left over by certain effects that was actually, like, good for the film?
No.
I mean, I can't either. I mean, like I said, the cleaning up of the original frames, great. You know, you want to get rid of a few of the lines around the TIE fighters because they were doing, you know, like, the frames and stuff like that, and you can kind of see a small line around, fine, not a problem. I don't have a problem with that. But when you completely change things, and, you know, this film actually, someone made this point, and I agreed with, this film won Academy Awards for visual effects.
Yeah.
And by going through and changing all of that, then this film technically isn't that film anymore. You know, it's been recognized, it's been peer reviewed, you know, people worked on it. Now those people, it's like they may be in the credits, but you can't even see their work anymore. So I don't know. To me, that's kind of a little bit of a slap in the face. Like, I understand, like, well, I have more of something that I want to see here. I have an original vision that I want to accomplish. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like, yeah, but a lot of people help you achieve that vision, even with what you did during that time. So there would be part of me that's like, yeah, I want to preserve all of our efforts because it started out as mine, but it became ours, even though technically I'm the one who gets all the money. So
yeah, and I one thing that really bothered me is in A New Hope when the stormtroopers are, I can't think of the name of the things, you know, the things that they're riding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were originally like just
the dewbacks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They originally were just like frozen models or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like animated them. And I think like it wasn't bad that they animated them. It just didn't look good.
Right. They didn't look like real creatures. And actually what worked in the original film was what there was like one of them or two, and they were so far away that you couldn't actually tell that they were just big giant puppets.
Right.
I didn't need to see them walking around because it did make it look ridiculous at that point when you saw that, because the effects weren't even all that great on them. And that was with millions of dollars being invested in it. And it was unnecessary. However, I think I did just think of an improvement that I did kind of like. It's when they're on the Death Star and they run down that hallway. It's Han and Chewie, and they're chasing down those stormtroopers. And all of a sudden he gets into a pack of them. And the original film is like maybe 15 troopers, and he kind of freaks out. I mean, it's not, look, overall, it probably still didn't need to be added, but I did enjoy it because all of a sudden he runs in there and there's an entire like legion of stormtroopers just standing out on one of those bays waiting. And then just, I don't know, Han's reaction, you know, to that is just hysterical to me at that point because he's shitting himself. So to me, that was like, okay, I'm okay with that change. You know, that's fine. But the rest were just a little too far. So,
yeah.
Well, I guess Justin Bieber.
That guy, man. Like, so for people that don't know, Justin Bieber was being questioned about by lawyers about the way that his security guards handle people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if like he's getting sued or whatever for like,
was it
the bodyguard being aggressive?
Was it dealing with the bodyguards, or would it have to do with his Miami?
It may have. Yeah. It may have. I'm not 100%. I just know there was a deposition going down.
Right.
And the entire time he's being questioned, like, he's, like, rolling his eyes and, like, making little stupid comments. Like,
I mean, he's almost 20 years old, too, and he's acting like a 5-year-old, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
No, I don't have to talk to you.
Like, he's just got a face that's aching to be beat in. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't, maybe we're not covering good new ground here, but it's just, if anybody hasn't seen it, which I'm pretty sure a lot of you have, mm-hmm. like, it just, like, I think he out-Kanye'd Kanye. Like, yeah. I really think in that he was just, like, everybody forgot everything Kanye had ever done,
mm-hmm.
because now there's, like, an even bigger douche.
Yeah. There's a new douchebag on the block.
I just, you know, I guess I won't be happy until someone pulls a Deliverance on him, you know, like just go and squeal like a pig, you know, that's what needs to happen at this point.
Well, you know, it was funny, like maybe a week ago, I was talking with a friend of mine, and I was thinking about the entire Bieber thing, and I was feeling a little bit like, you know, well, I mean, I wasn't trying to defend him or anything like that, and I most certainly wasn't, but I'm like, I mean, I kind of get it, you know? I mean, he's still pretty young. He's really immature. He's really stupid. That does not justify any of his really ridiculous and stupid actions. However, it is sad that this is like a regular trend in Hollywood, you know, or in the business where you have, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Lindsay Lohan was pulling antics. And so she's kind of cleaned up a little bit. She seems to kind of normalize. Amanda Bynes was totally off of her rocker and was actually committed. And you know, so if you were there, I mean, but this seems to happen a lot, and it does make you kind of question, like, is it the individual, is it the family, or is it maybe the media, or even worse, maybe it's all of the things above, you know, like just the entire thing. And then I even learned a little bit more about his dad. Like, his dad, I guess, wasn't really in the picture until he became famous, and now, like, all of a sudden he's totally surrounding his son all the time, and he's like encouraging all the bad habits and everything like that. So I'm thinking, like, yeah, super douchebag, you know? So, okay, I kind of get it. You know, he's really kind of fucked up, you know, and he needs some help. But then things like this come along, and I'm like, nope. You know, this kid is just, yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you at that point. It's like, I'm not saying that everyone should just get the shit beat out of them for being stupid or anything like that. But, I mean, this kid is almost like yelling from a rooftop, like, come and beat the living ever life out of me, because, you know, I'm just asking for it. I'm begging for it. So,
yeah, it's really crazy. And I have a feeling it's going to end very badly for him.
Well, I mean, I kind of had the prediction a little while ago, like, this is no different than Vanilla Ice, to be honest. I mean, Vanilla Ice didn't really, I don't know if he really ever went that extreme. You know, not really certain, to be honest, but still, I just kind of figured, like, you know, this kid's talent is all right. I mean, I think he actually has some, but a lot of people do. He just has a spotlight on him. You know, he was kind of I know some people were thinking, like, oh, well, you know, his fans are the ones who really kind of made him famous because of his YouTube stuff. I'm like, no. His dad was in the business. You know, he had a lot of people around him pulling strings to get him in the business. So he is kind of like, he has showbiz parents, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know how that story will ultimately end. I mean, I feel bad for him, I guess, overall, but at the same time, I'm like, he's an adult. He basically, everything that he does, every action that he takes, you can't just, you know, cast it on to like the parents and say, well, it's their fault. Well, he's making choices. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
so
then now I guess the new Flash costume. Did you see that?
I did. It looks really good.
Actually, I really liked it. Someone said it kind of looked like the Rocketeer costume.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe because of the jacket a little bit. I don't know. Or maybe because of the mask with the bolts on the side and everything like that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really like the costume. I think it looks really good. It's actually made by the same costume designer who did Arrows, and she was an Academy Award winning costume designer. So I thought it was really good, even though some people kept complaining about the shade of red that they decided to use. But I'm like, are you seriously thinking that that they're going to put him in some sort of bright red costume for the television? It just doesn't seem like they would probably go that route.
Yeah, I don't see the Rocketeer. I'm looking at it again.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it.
Yeah. Did you see the other pictures that they had from set, like during the daytime?
Yeah.
I think it's a great costume. I really do. I mean, my only thought about it is that probably over time they'll make it a little bit more fitted, because it did seem a little slouchy in some areas. But I'm thinking at the same time, too, even as I say that, if this is a suit that he created, you know, it's not going to be like perfectly fitting it to begin with. It's probably made out of different pieces of things that he bought, and he may have sewn some stuff together, of course, you know, maybe the mask and everything like that. But, you know, ultimately there's going to be like imperfections in the costume that will over time be improved upon, just as they did with Arrow. You know, like, his costume has kind of gone through a slight evolution and gotten a little bit better as the show's progressed. So I'm happy with it. I think it's going to be a great costume on screen that I can't wait to see, you know, how that looks when he's running and everything like that. So I think that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it'll look a lot better. A lot of times when I take these shots, the cinematography isn't taken into account.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're seeing it from, like, whoever's shooting its lens, pretty much.
Right.
You know, it's not... because, I mean, when you look at it, like, in the promotional pictures versus the behind-the-scenes pictures, it's, like, completely different.
Yeah, yeah. And
then look.
And also, they're thinking, well, this actor actually has to use this. And so, you know, I'm sure they'll, like, the lighting will be different, the angles that they come at. It'll make the costume look amazing. So when they did the promotion picture, of course, he's squatting kind of in a runner's position. So
right.
That can kind of show you like where they're aiming to really capture the costume on those angles, you know? So
I just hope it's good. I mean, I've heard good things about Arrow. I haven't watched it yet, but yeah. I hope it gets the same kind of respect.
If they do what they did in Arrow, you know, and I watch Arrow all the time, like what they've done with Arrow is amazing. They've got, you know, they've got an amazing array of characters. They've actually brought on, and I won't give any away if you haven't seen it or you end up watching it, but they've actually introduced a lot of classic Batman villains into the story. I mean, they'll go to other villains as well. I mean, they'll go to any of the DC characters. So that's the one great thing. And there may be an appearance by members of the League of Shadows. That's all I'll say. Or League of Assassins. Actually, they went with League of Assassins, not League of Shadows in this. So kind of more from the comic, and the way that they portray each character feels really original, but at the same time there's a lot of faithfulness that's still kept from the source material, which you don't often
yeah.
see. But the main actor, Stephen Amell, who plays Arrow, brilliant, like really has done an amazing job. So it's kind of like Batman, except, you know, you got Green Arrow's character. And over time, they've really differentiated those two characters and really given like Arrow a place in that world that doesn't seem so much like Bruce. In fact, there was one line, because Stephen Amell sometimes does Q&As after each show. And of course, people ask, like, is Batman ever going to make a guest appearance on the show? Have they come up with that? And he's like, no, not yet. He's like, but I always thought it would be kind of funny if one day, like, you know, Arrow is sitting down at the computer and he sees like billionaire, you know, whatever. And it starts going through the different details about Bruce Wayne. And he's like, oh, wow, guy really needs to get a little bit more original, you know, something like that. I'm like, yeah. And I could totally see the show doing something like that. But anyway, the guy that they cast as Arrow, they did have him do like a little guest run, like two episodes on Arrow to kind of introduce his character.
Right.
I think it's a great actor. He really did a great job. I could totally see him in the role. They didn't go with some guy who was like big and built. They really went with kind of like a guy who seems like he's a little bit of a nerd, you know, like, and he's also a criminal, you know, inspector or investigator or whatever. So a CSI, you know, member. So I'm like, perfect. You know, like, I think they did a good job with that and it looks good. So I'm excited to see what comes out this fall with that show.
Who's which Batman villains made an appearance on Arrow? I'm just curious.
Let's see. So I'm trying to remember right now. Ra's al Ghul has been mentioned a lot of times. In fact, he is one of the kind of imminent threats on that show. And his daughter has shown up before. I don't believe it was Talia, though. I believe it was his other daughter. So, I mean, really, when I think about, like, who's come in from the Batman universe, that's mostly what it is. It's not really Batman's main rogues gallery.
Right.
But, you know, like, right now, one thing that they've introduced to the show is, oh, man, what is the team's name? There's a team that has, oh, I can't remember their name, but they're introducing them in some new episodes. And there's actually a little bit of, there's a rumor mill going around. And they showed a clip of this one character with blonde hair and pigtails. The Suicide Squad. That's who, there they are. So they're bringing those on, and they may be going with the new 52 approach, which would mean that Harley Quinn is a part of that group. And so in this
Sweet.
Preview, it looked like Harley Quinn. You just saw the back of her. You saw the pigtails, but it seems like she may make an appearance on this show. So they've had that. Of course, one of the main characters on the show, more on the island side of it, because the show is not just... you know, him in Starling City instead of Star City, they went with Starling City. On the island, he made a friend, a person who was part of Australian Special Forces, Slade Wilson, who, of course, becomes Deathstroke. And while he's on the island, they're not enemies, they're friends. And so now the show is kind of like Slade Wilson is alive, and he is technically superhuman because of something that happens during the show, but not to like some weird level, like not to a totally far off level. It's like chemically induced, just actually like Slade Wilson was done in the comics. But it's a very interesting premise. And anytime I think Slade Wilson, I mean, he was mostly targeted, like I guess at the Teen Titans, but he's had a lot of Batman crossover as well. So I kind of see him more in that side of the DC universe, and it's really refreshing to see him over on the Arrow side of the universe. And he's basically pulling a lot of strings. They've had a lot of characters. They have introduced a lot of the characters also from Arrow's universe. And like Count Vertigo, and well, actually Count Vertigo, he may be Flash, not entirely positive, but they've introduced all these various characters in their own way, without being too ridiculous, and it's been great. So if you ever pick up the show, I think you'll really like it. You know, you might have to stick through there on the first couple of episodes, but once you get past that, it really does pick up speed, and the characters really begin to evolve. So.
Well, once I get done watching The Americans, I will definitely dive into Arrow next.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. The Americans. I know you just started watching that. You're three episodes in, correct?
Right. And now my question is, why isn't this the most talked about show on television?
I know. You know what? I think one of the things may be is that when people think Keri Russell, they're still thinking Felicity. So
yeah, she really is phenomenal on this show.
Mm-hmm.
What I've seen so far, yeah. Like I was really impressed with her acting. I've never been impressed with her acting before.
Mm-hmm.
I just never got into it for whatever reason, but it's really good. Like
yeah.
I didn't know if the premise would work when I first heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching it's like completely different. Like it's cool because it's set in the '80s, but it doesn't like shove it down your throat.
It's very subtle. It's part of their everyday life. So they're not constantly
right.
saying like, hey, guys, I mean, like there was an episode they did recently where it was like, hey, you guys want to go see Temple of Doom, you know, like that kind of reference. But
yeah,
it doesn't happen very often. And they're more focused on like just what everyday life is really like, you know, without that awareness. Hey, we're in the '80s. Check it out. You know,
I just thought it was phenomenal. Like in the first episode, they used Quarter Flash to open the show
mm-hmm.
and then they used Phil Collins.
Yeah.
And they were just like so perfect for the atmosphere of the show. It's so well directed.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell it's a lower budget, but it's a good way of using the lower budget. Like
yeah.
it's very raw. And it's really, I mean, it just really floors me that nobody's watching this. Like it's a Cold War drama.
Which I love Cold War dramas.
But I mean, it's just so, how do I say it? I mean, it's a complex show.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think people that, you know, have seen like Breaking Bad or Dexter would like this show because it's about a
right.
double life, you know, but it's cool because it's kind of like, and I haven't gotten very far and this might change, but it's like the opposite of Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me introduce it a little bit to anybody who may have not seen the show. I'm not going to give any major details away, but just stuff that generally you should know about the show. So the show is about a couple who are in secret actual KGB agents. They actually belong to this very special arm of the KGB, you know, and I forgot what the term is that they use on the show. But anyway, they are they're covert agents. They're very local to DC, and they get into a lot of they're called on assignment to go spy on various important individuals. They're in the and also, if you remember a lot of the 80s history, like, I don't know if you've already seen the episode with Reagan yet.
The only episode I've seen with the reference to Reagan was when they had done, the FBI had done something right and the chief of staff had called.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen one with him actually in it yet.
Okay, well, if you recall back in the 80s, of course, there was an assassination attempt against Ronald Reagan. That actually is one of the episodes. So I won't give anything other than that. I mean, they're just following the course of history during that period of time.
Right.
But that was probably the episode that I knew that I absolutely adored this show, you know, like without a doubt, because the way they approach it, the psychological mm-hmm. kind of pursuit of that, you know, and of course, they're like following the different things. They're looking at this whole thing as outsiders. They're not looking at it in a very like typical American way. You know, they're thinking about it from the point of view that the Soviets would, you know, like if someone in their country, for instance, had an assassination attempt, they would be looking at it as a political coup, you know? Yeah. And so when they look at what happens here in America, that's their first instinct and reaction as well, is that, is this an inside job? Is this a coup? So like American people don't think that. Their mindset was, and rightfully so, as it turned out, but this is a crazy psychopath who decided to take a shot at the president. But for these characters, they don't look at it that way. So that's why the show is really amazing. It's interesting to see how they balance the whole family dynamic. And mind you, the kids have no idea what's going on. You know, like they are clueless. They were born in this country. They are American born and bred, but their parents are doing something, or doing a lot of things that are totally would be shocking to them. And so it's interesting to see kind of how all this plays out in the show. And so if you haven't picked it up, you haven't watched it, I believe season one is now available on Netflix. It's definitely worth the watch. I think it's about 12 episodes. So maybe more like 10. So.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's also available on Amazon mm-hmm. Instant as well. So we definitely give it a check it out, 'cause this show needs to be bigger than it is right now.
Yeah. I think it kind of has to do with FX. I think they've actually made a big mistake on their marketing. I am seeing a lot more billboards for season two, but for season one, they didn't really get the word out. And of course, there's been this whole debacle with the FXX and then the, you know, like the additional channels that they decided to split off to with a lot of their major programming, which mm-hmm. was just confusing to the audience. I mean, have you even watched anything on FXX? There are two shows new on that station, and that's it. Everything else is reruns. So
yeah, I haven't turned it tuned into it yet. I just kind of set my DVR, and what's on my DVR is what I end up watching mostly. So,
but I mean, it's crazy to think that they could have just kept the one channel, but they were like, well, I don't know, we're gonna do spinoff channels now for whatever reason.
And one thing I think they did a major disservice to the show mm-hmm. is that on the advertisements, they didn't really show the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was like real cryptic. And I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to like do that same kind of mystery as the vibe of the show, like the codes and stuff like that.
But the problem is that, you know, people need to kind of see more to really.
Right.
Right. I kind of thought it was like the same person who did the editing for the American Horror Story trailers, which are, I don't know. I mean, from what I've seen with those are just kind of creepy and spooky, but that will draw the people because, you know, they're like, oh, that's interesting. For a Cold War drama that is in a definitely a different vein than that type of show, you need the backstory. You need to kind of show the characters a little bit, you know, just to kind of expose the audience to the fact that, like, if I had made a trailer for that show, I would have showed this family living a normal life, doing their normal routine, and then done the split side of that where all of a sudden they're not doing the normal routine anymore. That would have been far more interesting, especially in like a post Breaking Bad world, you know?
Right. And I just looked on the IMDb page. The Americans actually has an 8.2, which isn't too shabby.
Yeah, that's really good.
But you know what? While we're on the subject, what do you think of American Horror Story?
Never watched it.
I think it is one of the worst shows on television.
You know what? I just never got into it. I never did. I'm not really a big horror fan. And so that was one thing like, oh, not really interested now. American Horror Story, don't care. But everyone talking about how genius it is, I don't know. Sometimes I have a problem with that. You know, like I'm one of those people who are still a little bit burned by Lost. And I didn't watch Lost when it first came on. I ended up picking it up by the second season. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with that show. And then instantly my heart was broken when the show came to an end, just because of like how disappointing, you know, it was. So when people talk about how genius something is, I'm like, oh, well, the great thing about this show is that it's a new series. So basically, like, the show is like a mini series every year and they just bring back the same cast. But for me, I kind of like the longer story shows, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I still see people all the time talk about how genius it is and everything like that, but I just don't care, you know?
Well, I just, my opinion of the show is that it's like, let's see how many things we could throw against the wall and to see what sticks. Like, that's how the whole show feels. Like, every season has a genre, and it's like, let's throw a bunch of, like, crazy out there things, and it'll suck people in because it's so extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of, it feels like a more linear version of a Rob Zombie movie to me. I'm not going to say I don't like House of a Thousand Corpses or The Devil's Rejects on occasion, but it's not something I want to watch every week.
Yeah. I you know, I saw a clip actually not that long ago, actually maybe a week ago, and it was Jessica Lange, and she walks into a bedroom and she sees her husband screwing some girl, like the housemaid, but no, he was raping her. So that was instantly like, what the hell is this? And then she ends up killing the woman. And then I was instantly like, yeah, I have no interest in this show, you know, based off of that alone. I'm like, you know, because I got the type of gimmick from that. Like, oh, you thought she was going to kill the husband, but she actually killed the woman who was being raped. So now it's so, I mean, I just don't like stuff like that. I'm not into it. And I don't know. It just kind of, that was like, if I had any inclination, like maybe I should pick this show up, it was definitely dead at that point.
Yeah, I think that, like, it's a horror show for people that don't watch horror movies.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, I'm definitely not interested in that show.
Yeah, definitely stay away from it. But you are interested in another horror show.
Yes.
That I brought to the table.
I wouldn't even call that show a horror, to be honest.
Well, you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Smart horror.
Thriller.
Like the horror we got in the 70s. Rosemary's Baby.
I don't like horror, but I like smart thrillers, you know, and they can get kind of gory and gross and everything like that. But anyway, let's not jump the gun talking about the conversation until we announce what we're talking about. Of course, that show is Hannibal. And I just started watching it this past week and I'm already caught up. So I think that says everything about the show that you need to know, that I couldn't put it down. Like, I actually didn't go up to bed like the other night until 4 a.m. in the morning because I'm just like, OK, I have to watch this show all the way through.
Yeah, it's very addictive and very well written and very well thought out. There's not to be honest, I can't think of another show on television that's doing what that show's doing right now.
Yeah, I really can't. I mean, you know, I think originally you compared it to Breaking Bad, you know, because I think that's kind of like the gold standard now for a lot of people. And this definitely has that element, like that excellence behind it. And I know you weren't comparing it in like story, you know, or anything like that. Just the kind of the detail that they put into each story, though, that does kind of actually shine through on this show.
Yeah, well, I mean, my reasoning for saying that was like, like Lost was my thing, and then that went off the air, and then Breaking Bad was my thing, because you need a good show to look forward to, you know what I mean?
Right.
And this show has replaced that. Like, this is the next era, I guess. Like, this will be the show that I will always look forward to every week.
Yeah, I am too now. I mean, I didn't think I would be. Actually, I told you this like a week ago, but I hadn't even seen the Silence of the Lambs. I never even watched that. So I ended up watching that like last week, and I thought it was actually a really good movie. I enjoyed it. But then my thought was, after watching that, like, you know, and I kind of watched that, I guess, to begin with, because one, I couldn't find Hannibal anywhere. It was only available on iTunes. And so this week I actually was like, oh, I'm buying this, you know, it wasn't that bad. I think I paid like $30 for the entire season. But I, watched the original movie and I'm like, okay, you know, I get it. You know, it's interesting character in Hannibal. The show does none of that. You know, I mean, it has the thriller aspect. It has that. There are some elements that carry over from that movie. And in fact, by mid-season in Hannibal, there's actually an episode that feels just like Silence of the Lambs, but with different characters, even though, you know, like with Miriam Lass is like the equivalent to Clarice. But I don't know. It's hard to really summarize what this show, you know, well, not what it is, but how great it is. You know, like, there's something about it that instantly draws you in. However, the actor who plays Hannibal is a genius. I just got to say that. Absolute genius. Yeah.
Hugh Dancy's really good
as Will
Graham as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually love all of the cast. I think Lawrence Fishburne does a great job. And of course, I don't remember her name, but the woman who plays Will's friend slash kind of love interest.
Right.
She does a really amazing job as well. And I also noticed that within the investigation team, Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall is part of that. And I just was like, I'm on board just because of Scott Thompson alone. Cause I love Scott Thompson, but
I do too.
Yeah. But anyway, it was just like, it was an amazing show. Really. I mean, like, and what was really fascinating, of course, was the way they bring in Hannibal into the show. Because like with Silence of the Lambs, you get this vision of like Hannibal the cannibal. You know, he's already a criminal. He's already behind bars. What this show did by keeping him from behind bars and actually putting him in the mix, making him like, you know, Will's psychiatrist, is brilliant beyond belief. And then how he has this insight to all the stuff that's going on, and it gives him like this little peek. But tell me, what is your favorite part about the characters? Me personally, it's when he cooks.
I think like what I like about it is how subtle it is and how manipulative he is. I mean, he moves the entire show like a chessboard.
Yeah.
And that's what I find intriguing. And they do it really well. It's not like real blatant. It's not real emphasis on plot twist. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of shows do that, like, oh, look at this plot twist we have coming towards you, you know?
Right.
Hannibal is real subtle about it.
Yeah.
And it adds up and it feels organic versus making it just out there, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I guess that's like my biggest thing that really makes me like the show a lot more. It doesn't seem as like Hannibal is a cartoon character in this.
Right.
Like it does in the original films.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they've done with Will Graham. With the whole losing his mind thing, mm-hmm. that felt very organic the way they did it, and then they built it up really well and it delivered. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things about this show that I love. I love the art direction. The cinematography is fantastic.
I was going to say the costume design is amazing. If you're really into that, like I am, especially Hannibal suits. I mean, I don't know. Like those things are amazing.
Yeah, and I would kill for Hannibal's house, honestly.
His house, like, his office.
Yeah.
You know, I actually really love the Quantico classroom that Will was in season one.
Yeah, it's great lighting in that room.
Oh, man, it's another great thing about this show. It's actually, I think you mentioned it, this show's not a huge budget. You know, it's like never over budget. They never deal with that. But, you know, the great thing about this show, too, is like the way they light things. The way that the camera moves, it's like you said, it's actually all very subtle. You know, I think that we're in the age right now where everything, for instance, I was watching The Following, you know, I was just looking for another show like to kind of add to my lineup. I wasn't really watching many things at that time. A lot of things that I love have gone, like Breaking Bad. So I was looking for some sort of like show to replace that. Well, I started watching The Following with Kevin Bacon. And I really enjoyed the show at the beginning, and then I really grew to hate it by the end, because every single week it was like, oh, this is a plot twist. Oh, guess what? This is really going on. And guess what? This character is not who you thought they were. And they kept killing characters left and right. And I'm like, you know, this is the kind of show that I actually hate, you know, because it's just like they're not really following a story. They're just seeing like, you know, how that they can shock and surprise you. And I don't care. You know, like I'd rather you write a good story so you didn't have to use those gimmicks, you know, as a way to kind of reveal your really bad writing, you know? So, but with this show, there's none of that. It's actually a show that this is a compliment, even though it won't sound like it is. And there are definitely parts of the show that don't seem that way at all. But this, for me, is this kind of show that you could fall asleep to. And I know that sounds like okay, you know, like just bored to death. But that's not really it. It's just there's something so smooth about the entire progression of the show and how well written the dialogue is and how everything unfolds that it is almost kind of like, I don't know, it's just, like I said, it's really smooth and it's. And it just kind of, you know, I don't know, it's not overprocessing your brain as you're watching it. So
yeah, I mean, it's a really organic show. I think they do a good job with it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a big fan, and I'm looking forward to this season. I know there are two episodes in. I already caught up with both of those. So when does the show come on regularly? Because I've only watched it now on online.
It comes on Friday nights, okay. Which I wish they would remove it from that time slot.
Mm. It's not a great time slot, like, for any television.
No, I think it comes on about 8 or 9. Like I said, I always watch stuff off the DVR.
Mm-hmm. If it's doing well on Friday night, though, I'm happy about that because, you know, they have really no competitors. And Friday night is not traditionally a night you want your show to be on. I mean, I know for shows like Fringe, for instance, they were on Fridays, and that show was dead on arrival, you know, once they moved to that time slot.
Yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up for the week. If anybody gets a chance, I'd like everybody to check out a great article on BuzzFeed. Man goes to Magic the Gathering tournament and poses next to butt cracks. It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, that definitely sounds read-worthy.
So just giving everybody a smile on their face before the weekend. But yeah, that about does it. I'm Brock Vincent Sharp.
My name is L. Nichols, and just to let you guys know, please go and follow and like us on Facebook. We are at Stray Popcorn. We're also on Twitter at Stray Popcorn as well. And that is it.
And you can also find us on Stitcher Radio now.
Yes, that's right. We're on Stitcher now. Is there a direct link there, or if they just do a search for Stray Popcorn?
Just do a search, and we're on there. It should make it a lot easier for a lot of people. I know a lot of people use that platform. So
fantastic. All right. Well, that is it. Hip-hop.